All right, hello everyone, and thanks for tuning in once again to the Black Special Needs Parents UK podcast. Really appreciate everyone that has listened. We encourage you to share with anyone that might find it interesting. Today is going to be a special episode. I'm the only one that will be on the episode today. Tutu is not going to be joining me because it's a special dad's episode. And today I've got a very special dad who will be recording with me. His name is Uncle Tony. So welcome, Uncle Tony, to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
All right, cool. Thanks, Uncle Tony, for doing this. Really appreciate it. Can you please just introduce yourself to our audience?
Great. My name is Anthony Ezeliora. I'm the father of two boys, and I have two grown-up daughters. I work as an engineer in a small construction firm. And I'm a 61-year-old man. That's essentially, in a nutshell, that is what I am.
All right, cool. Thanks, and it's nice to have you on the show. As everyone knows, I'm Kenny, and this podcast is done by myself and my wife, Tutu. I have a daughter, Olivia, and a son, Peter. And we just do this to just share our experience as parents to a child with special needs. So, Uncle Tony, let's just kick off with the episode. So, as far as I'm fatherhood, it's a very interesting transition in life. So with everything, we are born, we grow up, we get married. So life has different milestones. And I think fatherhood is one of them, one of those important life milestone in every man's life. So just wanted to get your thoughts on your expectations into fatherhood. So you must have got married or had a partner at the time. And then the natural progression with things like that is you start to look forward to fatherhood. So what was your expectations of fatherhood? And when you first said you were going to be a father for the first time, how did that feel?
Interesting. It was something that I was agog with expectation. It was a wonderful feeling. And then I thought about everything. Finding out about the baby's sex in a very short period, you plan all the things you expect to do with your child, even as far as school runs and the rest of it. It was a very wonderfully expectant period for me, and it was something I was excited to let my friends and family members know about, and. So it was a very full. I felt fulfilled, and it was a great expectation.
Yeah, I totally understand. I remember when I learned I was going to be a father for the first time. It was one of the happiest days of my life. You have all the expectation, and like you said, you start to prepare for it. I remember at the time we were living in a one-bedroom flat, and we said, no, then we have to start to move. So start preparing, buying the baby stuff, start looking for a new place to live. We changed flats. At the time, the flats needed some doing up, but you know, pregnant women can stay around paints and also all those expectations, preparation, everything is such a wonderful feeling. I totally agree. And then, like this podcast is, we talk about our kids with special needs. So everybody already understands that you and I both have children with special needs. So how and when did you find out about your child's special need, the diagnosis? At what point how did you find out about it, and when and how did you find out about it?
It was most unexpected. When my son turned 18 months, he went on holiday to Nigeria, and he was, prior to going to Nigeria for, he only went to Nigeria for 4 weeks, he was beginning to eat solid food, make the usual gurgling noises, and was able to say a few words. And then he went to Nigeria, came back, and then for some unknown reason, there was a slight change that was quite easily noticeable. He began by rejecting food, turning away and not wanting to eat. Now, prior to his going to Nigeria, he ate just about everything everybody else ate in the house. And like I said, he said a few words. And we ignored it. We didn't think much of it. And then it was time for him to go to nursery. We had problems. He had stopped eating. He had stopped eating the regular foods that he normally had. And we took him to the doctors, and the doctors referred us to, I think the doctor saw him and told us that he would be all right. But eventually he referred us to I think it was a child psychologist anyway. But it took a while before there was a diagnosis. And my wife and I attended this diagnosis, and then all this while my mind was that it was just a temporary thing, that he will get over it. And I listened, and we were told that we had to prepare for that he might be needing help with a lot of things. My son, who hitherto had been able to eat properly, eat everything, we had to think of the right foods to give him. And he began to form little habits of lining stuff up, the usual things. And my son became, for some reason, very quiet, wouldn't speak much anymore, wouldn't even make the usual noises he made. Then at the end of our session with the child psychologist, we were told that it was a lifelong situation, and that was a big jolt for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a few similarities with our case as well. So our daughter Olivia, I guess we caught it about 5 months. We had gone to church on the day for a dedication. And prior to that, we've noticed that she's been making like some jolting motions with her hands. We thought nothing of it at the time, but during the dedication, my grandma mom was around, and I told her because she started making those motions, and I said, "Grandma, we've noticed that she does this," and grandma said, "Doesn't seem right. We should definitely get it checked up." So went to the GP. GP referred us to do some tests. After a few tests, that's when we found out, oh, she has a chromosomal deletion. And similar to yours, is a case of it's going to be a lifelong condition, and it will be a case of managing it. And with our case, the chromosomal deletion manifesting a spectrum of symptoms. So in some children, they have seizures, some don't have seizures. In our own case, she had lots of seizures, so we had to get some medications and all in place. But yeah, it's one of those things. So looking at the journey, the father journey, you have your child, and then you get this diagnosis. So with the diagnosis and all, and the reality that, okay, your child is not going to be a typical child, did that in any way change your expectations of fatherhood or your what you already had planned out? So, we discussed about when you discovered that you're going to be a father, you already had all these plans in place. Post-diagnosis, how did things change, and how has it affected the way you treat or look at fatherhood?
Oh, absolutely. It was a drastic change, I must say, because we had every other plans and expectations went out the window. I mean, for me, it was overwhelming knowing that he would for it was a lifelong situation that, and then 12 months after the initial diagnosis, he had his first epileptic episode, and then that in my, I have to say that was the scariest situation. Very first time was the scariest situation I had ever experienced. And then in due course, after subsequent fits, we got used to it. We accepted it, and we sort of learn, read a few about it, and acquainted ourselves with how to deal with it when any subsequent episodes. So that was it. But that was it. That was a drastic change in expectations, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And one word you mentioned really resonates is about acceptance. That's what it is the fact that you just have to accept it and then make subsequent adjustments. Because in our community, the Black community, where we are very religious and all, I remember a family member, after we shared with them the diagnosis, the first thing they said was, "Why are you allowing this to happen?" Which took me aback, because it was, because as Christians, there's a doctrine that sometimes some people believe, oh, you can patch your course in life, and anything you don't want, you pray against it and then turn it around. It was quite hard to accept, but at the end of the day, these things happen in life, and like you said, it's just about accepting it. There's also a lot about learning and unlearning. So a lot of things, like learning a lot of the medical terms, learning about doses, how to administer doses. In our case, in our own case, we have to use a lot of medical equipment. So learning about medical equipment, things that typical parents don't need to worry about. But yeah, those are some of the things, some of the adjustments that one just has to make. And I think it's just, once you go through the acceptance stage, I think that's when it gets easy, because you just know that, okay, this thing will happen. While I'm hoping for the best, I mean, we thank God for medical advice, where there are medical professionals out there constantly doing work. Because like in our case, Olivia had seizures, and it's from learning a lot about it. We will go back to the doctor, probe on different medications we can use, up to the extent that we now got approved for a clinical trial for a diet. And when we administered that, that seemed to do the trick, and she has stopped having seizures. So lots of things to consider, learning, definitely learning a lot is part of it. I guess,
you can go on. You know, when you mentioned something about church member asking you to reject that.
Yeah.
Because when I first started taking my son to church, he would be really all over the place. He would run up to the pulpit and stand beside the pastor and oblivious of everything around him. Anyway, a lady in my church asked me, how did my son get this? Did he get it off of me or my wife? And I said, oh no, he just had it. And she told me that no, it doesn't work like that. She said it had to have come from either my wife or myself. And I said, well, I didn't know about that. Quite a lot of people do not understand what you go through on a daily basis. But thank God, over the years we've learned to live with it and understand it and appreciate the blessing we have in our child. And then, more importantly, we do not have any dull moments in the house.
Yes, that's totally. I mean, some of these people, I think they don't come from a bad place. I think we have come to the realization that a lot of people is just based on their understanding. So we don't take some of these comments to heart. But also what we try to do is to educate people, like in our case, to people that after, oh, why does she have this genetic anomaly? Would it be from one of us? And we educate them that this thing is just a bad defect. We've done tests and the results are showing that none of us has any gene or anything that could have caused it. But it's just some things that just happen in life that are unexplained. So yeah, I think there's a lot of education that needs to go. And that's why we have platforms like this. We've got the podcast. We hope people would listen to it and learn from it. And then that helps to improve their behavior going forward. So, yeah, I think that's what we can do. Okay, following from that, so how do you cope with like comparison? We've seen that you had different expectations and then life has happened. How do you cope with comparison? Because you have like siblings or friends that have children of similar age. How do you cope with that? I know it's a human nature. From small, I'm a twin and I get that a lot. And people try to compare me, or what's your twin brother doing now, and this and that. And I see we might tend to want to deal with our children. So, what techniques or advice will you give to somebody that will be wanting to compare?
I would normally, for instance, when we've gone to meet family members, I try to explain, well, the adults, most adults seem to understand this day and age. And I try to tell them what my son's condition is and then how it manifests itself, and then and essentially that it is something that we always have to keep an eye on out for our child. And then that obviously it's a birth defect. There is nothing anyone can do about it. And that now we go on, life goes on, and then my child is my child. The important thing is that to give them as much love as I can muster, you know. But family members so far have shown good understanding. It's always important to have to explain to them.
Yes, we thank God for support. Yeah, I think family members tend to get it. You explain it to them. I think by virtue of the fact that we are all families, yeah, they get to understand. But also, I think generally there's a bit more understanding of things like this going forward, and we hope like with platforms like this, people also improve their knowledge and be a bit more empathetic. In my case, I think I've just come to the realization that life, as is good and bad, you have to take the good with the bad of life, because in our lives we see that a lot of good things happen to us, but in contrast as well, bad things happen. It's the yin and yang of life, and just about embracing those things, because that's what makes life what it is. So yeah, it's just about that consciousness, and just bearing that in mind. I guess the next thing is about our spouses. Let's talk about our spouses. So how have you been able to support your wife through this process? Because traditionally, a lot of the upbringing is usually left to the moms, because they are a bit more nurturing and all. But now you're saddled with an additional responsibility of a child with complex medical needs or special needs. And I believe it takes a joint effort to get the best out of the situation. So what are some of the things you do to support your wife through this journey?
It's I have to say, for all these years since my son's diagnosis, such wonderful little pleasures as holidays have taken a back seat, because on occasions when my son's had, because there was a period when my son had fits every other month, and on such occasions I would have to skip work. And these times I take off work comes off out of my annual holiday. And so we have alternated. I've had, on occasions I've had to sleep in hospitals with my son. And I have to say though that I really do commend my wife for the effort she is putting through raising my son. She seems to understand him. She seems to understand the situation a lot better than myself. And I do appreciate her for that. On occasions where she gets almost overwhelmed by his situation, I will take over. I mean, and such things as feeding, and these are things we alternated with no one. The situation of feeding my son isn't entirely one person's duty. So we alternately make his dinner and feed him. In my son's case, his all his meals are just made up of the same thing. His morning, noon, and night meals are the same thing. And so we do that. When she has other things to do, that's what I do. I am massively blessed by having her with me.
Yeah, definitely. In this case, teamwork is definitely the dream work in terms of when two of you are invested in it, it makes it a lot more easier and bearable. Likewise, in my own case, I've had to take time off for hospital appointments, admissions, alternating between admissions. So like when my daughter is admitted into the hospital, sometimes we have to be in the hospital for days. It can be overwhelming for one person to just be in the hospital throughout that period, but just alternating those appointments and admissions. Also the emotional support that is always good to give as well. And then helping out from time to time, just ease of the body into just giving free time, definitely helps, because it reflects on the child as well. That's what we notice as well, because they may have special needs, but they know when they're being loved, because I believe love is such a powerful emotion and it's such a powerful tool. And that love that you show to your spouse as well reflects on your child. So yeah, kudos to everyone. And just encourage anyone listening to as well. I know it can be overwhelming, but try as much as possible to help out, to be there. It's just the right thing to do. Just the right thing to do. Hey. Cool. So let's touch on the lockdown. I mean, here in the UK, this month will make it about a year when we've been in a lockdown, in and out of the lockdown. I mean, we've had three lockdowns in the UK. So how has lockdown been for you?
Lockdown, it's strangulating. We've been through quite a few episodes. We had is my son really does nothing. Especially during this winter, he's had to be cooped up inside indoors all day. And then we tried to manage to get him to come to the shop with me. And then, you know, it's especially because my son's 15 now. And then, not going to school and the online learning hasn't been very good for him, because he loses interest very quickly. So it's been difficult, but every now and then I take him when we can to, I take him to shops when I have to, but he stays in the car while I shop. He stays in the car with his older brother, you know. But it's been very difficult. We are really looking forward to the easing of lockdown.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, if one thing this lockdown has really given me is an appreciation for both medical professionals and teachers, especially teachers of children with special needs. We have had to learn a lot. Teaching especially in child, so they've sent a lot of, so the school was magnanimous to send a few equipment and teaching material. So we've had to see things in the eyes of a teacher. So for us, it has also helped us to learn how to teach things the way the teacher does. Also with the medical professionals, like the physios, the occupational therapies, they keep sending us exercises that we can do with that. But definitely, I have a renewed respect for these professionals and what they do in their day-to-day life. And definitely looking forward to easing of the lockdown. But on the positive, though, What this lockdown has really given me as well is just to see the changes in my daughter, because in normal opportunities, you'd have been busy with the day-to-day hustle and bustle. She's off to
Yes.
school, you see her just for a few hours. But now we are locked up 24/7. So you can see those little changes, like in our movement, in our communication, because we're there all the time. We're seeing these improvements. So it's making us appreciate the progress she's making, albeit slow, but it's really visible to see now. So yes, that's been one of the positive as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right, thanks, Uncle Tony. I think we're rounding up now. I guess the final question I would just like to hear your thoughts on, or in light of where we find ourselves, the situation we find ourselves, what are your hope and aspiration for your child going forward?
While we have come to terms with the fact that my child's situation is a lifelong one. My hope is that med over the coming years that medical science will keep improving and every effort is made towards the introduction or innovation of things that would make life a lot more palatable and manageable for my child and children with special needs. And more importantly, I do appreciate the efforts of government so far in the help they've been rendering. My hope is that in years to come, that there has to be a lot more progress will be made in medical science to come up with innovations or innovations to make things a lot easier to manage. I mean, make the life of our children easier to manage. That's my hope, really.
Yeah, definitely, definitely echo those thoughts. I mean, we are just have to keep hope alive and keep hoping. Yeah, definitely I agree on the quality of life. That with medical advancements in AI, STEM technology, genome technology, that the technology comes in place to help them be able to integrate better into the society. And also my hope is that all the diversity and inclusion drive that is going on, especially in this part of the world, and hopefully it extends globally, all the diversity and inclusion drive that is going, where people are constantly striving for accessibility for people with special needs. So I know as a standard, there's going to be across all the underground wheelchair accessibility, most organization, top organizations, they are setting up quotas in place to be able to employ people with disabilities. So my hope and prayer is that that drive continues to move ahead, where up to an extent we begin to get like people with disability in leadership as well, so that it begins to permeate the society, where it becomes normal that we see that these people are also members of the society that need to have equal
Productiveness.
rights. Yes, exactly. But cool. Yes, that's what we hope and pray for. Thank you very much, Uncle Tony. It's been a
Oh.
really inspiring conversation. Nice to have you on the show. Do you have any
Okay.
parting words?
Girl, can you, the pleasure's all mine, and I do really appreciate the opportunity to be given the opportunity to express some of my views about this. And then my prayer is that we keep moving forward, that we keep hoping that improvements are made for the life of our children. That's just what it is. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Uncle Tony, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Your turn.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Bye.